Welcome to Philly Prime. I'm Dave Schrattweiser, and joining us again this week is former deputy commissioner in Philadelphia, Joe Sullivan. We talked last week about active shooters, mass shootings, police officers under attack, things like that. This week, we're going to talk about some things that are being done, or at least being proposed to be done, to kind of improve the gun violence situation, kind of especially here in Philadelphia, but actually across the country. Joe, welcome back to the show. It's great to have you again.
Great to be back, Dave.
Let's start with a proposal last week. Philadelphia Congressman Dwight Evans introduced a $51 billion, I won't call it a crime bill, but let's call it, you know, it to address crime, especially gun violence. And there's additional money in there to support police. There's additional money in there to support community programs. There's additional money in there to deal with the mental health component that we talked about last week for dealing with that kind of thing. It's kind of an omnibus bill with a lot of money attached to it that he seems to be very confident that is going to pass and start to move in its way. I would assume that's something you're in favor of. I don't hear the defund police stuff as much these days. And now I hear $51 billion, some of it going to police. Philadelphia has done a little bit of that kind of thing. It sounds like it's starting to move in the right direction.
Well, I mean, it does. The whole defund the police movement was an abject failure. You know, we don't defund the police. We fix what's wrong. And I think that there was a lot of knee-jerk reactions by people in elected office to just do something, you know, without any type of conducting any type of research or study. And we saw that in Philadelphia when they reduced the authorized strength of the department. And they canceled two academy classes at a very crucial time. And then, remember, it's 9 months to go through the police academy. So if you hire 200 police officers today, you know, you're not seeing them till next year. So it was very short-sighted, but I'm very glad to see the representative that is doing this, because yes, we need more police officers. We need better police officers, but we need to utilize them in the correct fashion. We need to be very data-driven, very strategic, and not just hiring more police officers is not the answer. It's determining what our needs are and then hiring to meet that need, and then making sure that, again, we're deploying them in very data-driven fashion and putting them in the right places at the right times, addressing the right behaviors, being very, very discriminate so that we are able to accomplish the objective of making communities safer without at the same time occupying those communities and damaging, you know, already fragile relationships. The other part of that is policing is half of the equation. The other half is community and hospital-based gun violence intervention strategies. I mean, we need people on the street, people with lived experience who are intervening in disputes. And you know, when we do have a victim of a shooting, and he or she is fortunate enough to survive, it's very important that we use that particular opportunity, that moment in their lives, research shows is one of the best times to try to intervene and try to determine like what put you in this hospital bed and what would keep you from coming back. Because one of the greatest indicators that someone will be a shooting victim is the fact that they've already been a shooting victim. So, you know, Temple has a great program. You know, that's led by Scott Charles.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we need those programs in every one of our trauma centers, but they need to be coordinated. And as I said before, we need community-based violence intervention programs operating throughout the city. But they have to operate independent of the police, so they're not seen as you know, deputies of the of law enforcement. But there has to be that cooperation and information sharing. If the police know that there's some type of a dispute that's brewing between two groups, we have to make sure we're sharing that information with our partners on the community-based side, so they know how to set their priorities. They know who it is they need to target, and we have to make sure that we give them the resources. Because if I come to you, Dave Schrattweiser, and say, "Listen, you know, I know what you're thinking about doing. I know you're thinking about shooting Joe Sullivan. What could I do to change your mind? What is it I could provide you?" And you have to be able to do that right there. If that means a bus ticket out of town, if that means relocation, if that means witness protection, you know, these are some of the things that, you know, are just not being done in Philadelphia right now. The witness protection program is severely underfunded. It's very limited. If we're going to get people's confidence back, if we want people to cooperate when they're witness to a violent crime, we have to demonstrate the fact that we will protect you and we will prosecute the shooter. Right now, violent crime prosecutions are way down in Philadelphia. Dismissals and withdrawals are way up. I don't begin to understand why goof arrest, although they are increasing every year, the percentage of convictions has decreased below 49%. All of this is happening while serious crime is rising. And we saw a huge rise. The spike began in 2018 and it continues. But in 2019, we saw the number of cases charged by the DA nosedive. Those two things do not reconcile with one another. We've seen sentences for violent offenders that take an equally drastic nosedive. So, you know, if no one wants to return to the days of mass incarceration, no one is suggesting that, at least I'm not. But again, you know, based on research, academic research, we know that a very small number of people in, whether in Philadelphia and every other city in America, are responsible for an inordinate amount of violent crime. And unless you identify those individuals and you remove them from the community, there is going to be, the violence will continue. It's just that simple. And that's just what's happening now. And at the same time, in the community intervention programs, they target people that are probably likely to commit a crime, haven't done it. And that's where prevention comes in. We try to intervene in their lives. We try to bring them to a place, get them, whether it's mental health, for the trauma that they've seen in their lives, help them with education, help them find a job. But we got to make sure that they're mentally, you know, they're emotionally ready to take a job. But in the meantime, make sure that they're not that they have a place to live, that they are able to feed their families. So that's why both of them have to work together in concert with one another.
Yeah. And Dwight Evans made that point the other day, and the folks that were at that news conference made that point. That's why there's a big chunk of this is for community groups, for jobs, for teaching, for, you know, classes to teach kids that is not the way to go back to carry a gun, to go back at somebody to shoot a gun or carry a gun because you're afraid you're going to get shot, those kind of things. And that's a crucial component, as you said, along the way. Talk a little bit about this. You have an organization, Families Behind the Badge. It does a lot of things, and I'm going to let you tell me what it does, but I'm aware that you guys stepped in a couple situations last year and the year before and kind of supplied some of that money that we're talking about, not in the billions of dollars, but kept some things going that were working in some of these communities. So first, tell me what Families Behind the Badge does, and then talk to me about your involvement, the organization's involvement in doing that.
Yeah, well, Families Behind the Badge Children's Charities, we were created to support the survivors of fallen first responders, but that's only one facet of what we do. We're there for children in need throughout the Delaware Valley. If there's a child involved, if there's a nexus to children, we're interested. And one of the things that, you know, COVID really, you know, like everyone else, it really limited what we could do. We were running the Police Youth Alliance program where we had cops playing chess, learning drumline, step dance, carpentry with children from from mission schools in Philadelphia. And you know, it was a beautiful program, but we had to suspend that because of COVID. So we began to look at other ways that we could have a positive impact on the community. And the commanders in Southwest Philadelphia reached out to us, and because they also recognized that some of they might, but by addressing the drivers of crime, we could have a positive impact on what was occurring out there. So we helped them fund a jobs program. We helped them fund a GED program. We're just providing the resources so that, again, if you come to a class to get your GED, I don't think most Philadelphians realize that, you know, having some food there is really a big thing, because some people, you know, they don't know where their next meal is coming from. And we had a very tragic incident where a young man was shot playing basketball first warm night of spring and doing whatever teenager wants to do is get out and enjoy the night. and that was at Christie Rec Center. And, you know, he was a student of Boys Latin. And unfortunately, there had been multiple students that were lost to gun violence that year from Boys Latin. And so the captain, working with elected officials and community leaders, came up with the idea for a skills and drills program. You know, there's an athletic component where the kids play touch football, basketball with the cops, but also they reached out to the young people and asked them some of the life skills that they lacked and would like to have an opportunity. And the girls said parenting. I mean, they acknowledged the fact that many of them were already parents, but they weren't prepared for it. Finances, opening up a bank account, just writing a check, things that we don't think again about. And again, you know, we're providing food and backpacks and T-shirts. It might seem simple to you and I, but to a kid living in abject poverty, that's a big deal. The other thing we did was we financed a gaming e-gaming center at the rec, providing a safe place for young people to go and just enjoy video games like every other kid without having to worry about whether or not, you know, a stray bullet was going to find you. It sounds terrible to have to even say those things, but it's the reality of the situation. So, you know, we are working now in a partnership with the Camden Police Department, and we're going to begin to run some programs over there, or I should say finance some programs over there that involve police and the community. And we're really excited about that partnership. They are, have really expressed an interest in working with us. But I think the problem in Philadelphia is that, you know, we tend to do something one time and then it just goes by the wayside, you know, and that thus far, that's been the problem with gun violence intervention programs. It's almost like a patchwork quilt, you know, a lot of people doing a lot of good things, but they're doing it individually where we need a cohesive strategy for community-based gun violence intervention.
Yeah, I covered that young man's murder at Christie Rec Center. One of the most heartfelt kind of vigils I have ever seen for that young man. I think there were 500 or 600 people there. And then I saw the days after it where the things you just talked about were being implemented and put in place, the skills operation there at the school, the video gaming operation there at the rec center, I should say. And it was amazing to see not only police officers volunteering to do that, community members volunteering to help out, folks who have coached, folks who played football, played basketball, whatever, coming out to try and assist young people and give them the skills and give them a place to go on a Friday night, rather than hanging around on the street corner. Come learn something, come learn a skill, come learn an athletic skill, come play games, but under some kind of supervision, come learn parenting, come learning how to fill, again, open up a bank account, write a check, things like you talked about. And you don't realize until you see that, and I got a chance to see that in person, what an impact that can have on a young person to try and keep them moving in the right direction. And that's what this is all about, is it not?
It is. And one of the other things we did is we provided the resources to take a group of young people to Temple University and just take a tour of the campus and just send that message that you should believe that you deserve to be here or somewhere in a college that, you know, I just was having this conversation that you had mentioned where yesterday I was at the Bartram High for a career day. And I was talking to a gentleman in the private sector and you know, the reality for a lot of these children is that, and when I say children, I mean teens, you know, when you talk to them, they have an expectation that they might not make it to see 30. I mean, that's a really sad statement. So it's important to get kids out of from these neighborhoods, you get them out and let them see other parts of the world. Let them understand that, no, you have the potential to do this. And there's people that will help you realize that potential. And I mean, that's exactly what PAL is based around. But you know, again, you know, it was frustrating for us because there was no follow up, and which is why we, you know, begun our partnership with Camden. I hope that, you know, with the work that the representative is doing and the money that's coming in there, we got to make sure that we put the right people in charge of it and the right people to monitor how it's being spent and make sure that there's a short term and long term strategies and that are in place and a system of accountability.
It'd be nice if you could impact these kids at a young age and follow it all the way through to the college years. I remember taking my son, Tyler, on a tour of Temple before he went there. And that was an eye-popping kind of day for him, who, you know, always wanted to go to college, that kind of thing. Some of these kids don't have a dream like that. You want to restore that dream, and then you want to show them it's possible and it can happen.
And you got to get in there in grade school, because these kids are dealing with at 7, 8, 9, 10 years old, they're dealing with things that Dave, you and I never even would have known about or dreamed about. You know, knowing what to do when they hear gunshots. I mean, that's a sad statement of our country. And so it's important that we get to children younger than I would have originally thought. I mean, we want to be with them all the way through, but we want to make sure that we get to them at the point where we can really have, you know, an impact on what they see as their future. And again, that was the point of the Police Youth Alliance program, whenever, and skills and drills. You know, we want the officers to have positive experiences with the young people living in their neighborhoods, at a rec center or at school, so that when they have to engage during an official visit, maybe, you know, clearing the corner, responding to a domestic at one of their houses, that it'll change the dynamic of that interaction, because, you know, we already know each other's names. You know, we already played chess. And I laugh because, you know, when we bring the young cops in from the street, you know, everyone's kind of hesitant. You got to push them a little bit. I always say it's like the 8th grade dance. You know what I mean? You got to just kind of push them. But in 15 minutes, they're talking trash to one another. The kids are wearing the cops' hats. And that's the whole goal, because we, you know, so, you know, it'll make it a different dynamic when you're clearing that corner and saying, hey, I remember you from chess. You need to go home and practice. What instead of the distrust that happens because of the just not having had that opportunity to interact and get to know each other as people.
Joe, I want to kind of segue into the last part of the show here and talk to you a little bit about some new things that are going on in the Philadelphia Police Department. I'm interested in your perspective on it with your 30 years experience and having run pretty much every possible element in the police department. He's either a chief inspector or a deputy commissioner. One of the new things they're doing is a shooting investigation group with 40 top detectives, top lieutenants, Captain John Walker at the top of that. It was an idea kind of fleshed out by Chief Inspector Frank Van Orr and Deputy Commissioner Ben Nash with the help of a lot of other people. They've picked some top-notch lieutenants to kind of run that group, and they handle non-fatal shootings. And there's been plenty of them in Philadelphia in the last 2 weekends. I think it was 2 weekends ago. In 4 days, we had 50 shootings and 8 or 10 people killed. And I guess their kind of modus operandi here is to get teams of guys out to these shootings as soon as they happen, right after they happen the next day, gather the video, gather the evidence, continue to push the investigation till you make arrests. Sounds like something that was a long time coming in Philadelphia. What's your thoughts about it? It's fresh. It's only 3 or 4 months old. They are having some clearance numbers that are starting to look pretty decent. Just your thoughts looking from the outside in.
I think it's an excellent idea. And the research shows that if you respond to non-fatal shootings the same way that you respond to fatal shootings, with more detectives going to the scene, detectives going to the hospital, detectives on social media, and collecting more physical evidence from the scenes, and putting more time into the investigation, that it's been proven in other cities that have followed the same model that you will see an increase in clearance rate. I would have liked to have seen the unit formed a lot sooner than it was. I mean, homicides in Philadelphia in the last 5 years have risen 95%. And, you know, to put that into perspective, you know, Philadelphia's homicide rate in 2021 was 35 homicides per 100,000 people, which made us number one in the country. I mean, we're a city of 1.5 million, and we have more homicides than New York City. We have more homicides than L.A. We have more homicides than Houston.
We're number two to Chicago last year, and looking like that this year so far.
But even if you look at, I think we're number two in overall numbers, but we're number one if you do it per capita. Which is why, if you remember, for many years, Camden was considered the most violent city in America. You looked at it per capita. So I think it's a great idea, and I think John is definitely the right man to run that unit. He certainly knows how to lead an investigation, and I'm really hoping. Again, as you said, seen some positive results early on. The problem, Dave, is that you and really impressive group of detectives they put in there, but everything comes at a cost, and the manpower situation in the police department is nothing short of a crisis right now. So we also have to study the impact it will have on the detective divisions, because we also have a carjacking problem, among many other things. So it took a lot of resources out of the divisionals, the detective headquarters, but we don't have officers that we can promote to backfill that, because patrol is at probably levels that I never even saw in my 38-year career. So I'm glad they did it, but the priority has to be, whether it's recruiting lateral police officers, but it's got to be recruitment and retention. Stop the bleed, because we're losing more officers than we're taking in, and it's become a serious problem.
Teaming the shooting investigation group on the same floor in police headquarters with the homicide unit. I know they want to build some type of cohesiveness with the two groups, share information, share intelligence information, share evidence, potentially, a shooting can turn into a fatality and a homicide quickly. Some of these shootings, people are critically injured, may die days later, and the two groups have to work together. Kind of your thought, that seems to me, covering the police department for such a long time, as long time overdue as well, that these groups got to be together. They got to be talking to each other, communicating with each other. Your thoughts about that part of this?
Well, absolutely. 100% the right move. And the detectives I talked to on both sides, both agree that it really facilitates better investigations, linking up like incidents, sharing intelligence about groups. I mean, if you have a specific group or gang in Philadelphia that's committing violence, and some of that violence results in homicide, some of it results in non-fatal shootings, to have those detectives investigating all of these incidents in separate buildings, it never made sense. We were always so desperate for space. You've been to the old homicide unit. I mean, it's just no one would believe it. You got the best of the best working together in both units, and all those detectives are motivated to make clearances. That's what they want, and so they're going to work together. There's not going to be any type of negative competition. There's going to be positive competition, but that was a very smart move, and I think we're already seeing results in both.
And the men and women who detectives volunteered to go to this. They put in for it. They wanted to go with a group that they thought could make an impact on some of these shootings or make an impact on the homicides. This was kind of a call to the police department, who's interested in doing this. And they did get kind of the cream of the crop there.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, listen, men and women are patrol officers that study hard to become detectives. And that's why they do it. I mean, they enjoy the hunt. I mean, they enjoy the investigation, putting the pieces of the puzzle together. And haven't always had the resources they need to do it and the leadership. So, here they are. They've got the space, they've got the computers, they're linked up with homicide, and everyone's, hopefully moving on the same page, and everything that I can see right now indicates that they are. So I think it was a very positive move, but, really have to be focused, have a laser-like focus on ways that we can keep officers to, stick around, put an end to these early retirements. We're going to address the morale issue. And, I think it was, they just talked about the budget for recruitment in the police department. And, it's pretty, you need to bring in, a private recruitment agency in my mind, to come in and make sure that we are running the smartest recruitment programs out there. There's the competition is unprecedented, and because everyone's having this problem. So what are we going to do to make the Philadelphia Police Department the most attractive option for a young man or woman that's graduating college with a criminal justice degree or out of the military, or simply, you know, someone that's ready to make a career choice. This generation looks at policing in a different way. And we got to make sure that we're letting them know that this is an opportunity for you to be boots on the ground, engaging with the community, conducting problem solving. That's what they want. The average young person today wants to feel that they're going to be a problem solver. They're going to have autonomy.
Yeah, they want to be part of a change, right? They want to see the community. They want to see the neighborhood. They want to see their city get better. And those could be their words, but this is a way to, you know, put your money into the game.
And that was another problem. You know, that was a poorly thought out action by city council when they reinstituted the pre-residency requirement. I mean, no other country does that. I 100% believe that we should give some type of a leg up to Philadelphia residents. You know, give them a couple extra points. But no department in America right now can afford to tell potential attractive applicants that you have to establish residency for 1 year in the city, and then maybe we'll give you a job. I mean, that's something that when I was the chief of training, Mayor Nutter got rid of because, you know, we had demonstrated to him, you know, how that was negatively impacting recruitment in police, fire, and prison. So that was a step backward and really, you know, it was like a year wasted in terms of recruitment, because, you know, for every 300 applicants, by the time you go through the entire process, you may only have 15. And we can't afford to, I mean, we should look at standards to make sure that they're relevant to the job, and to make sure that they're meaningful, and to make sure that they're fair, that they don't disadvantage women or minorities in any way. But I mean, at the end of the day, we know that we can't reduce standards. We got to decide what are the appropriate standards, and we can't variate from them, because the history of policing shows what happens when you do that.
Joe, as usual, it's always great to have you on the show. You're an encyclopedia of information, as I like to say, with so much experience on the ground in so many tense and chaotic situations over your career that I got to watch from the outside as a reporter. And I've always appreciated your talents and your knowledge and your smarts when it comes to policing, and appreciate you coming on the show, giving us a little bit of insight. And I got to tell you, if folks want to support Families Behind the Badge, I strongly encourage you to do that. They're trying to do the right thing, not only in Philadelphia. You just heard Joe talk about Camden as well. I'd love to see that be a huge success, and continue good luck with that.
Thank you.
Joe, thanks again for coming on the show. That's Philly Prime for this week. Thanks, folks, for joining us again, and we'll see you the next time around.